morning. I want to welcome all you hardy souls that made it beyond the marathon barriers. Delighted to see you. We are a church committed to welcoming all people, regardless of gender identity and sexual orientation. All are welcome here. I want to extend a special welcome to those of you who are here for the first time. If you're visiting, we encourage you to sign our visitor's book, which is in the cloister by the name tags, or at the welcome table in the parish hall so that we can stay in touch with you. We also invite you to take one of our classes designed for newcomers and those considering membership, such as Finding Yourself at Unity, a class which is being offered October 11th, 18th, and 25th. You can sign up for this class also at the welcome table in the parish hall. We hope that you find Unity Church to be a place which helps you find and keep your balance, a place which nourishes you and inspires you to lead a loving life of integrity, service, and joy. I'd like to call your attention to This Week at Unity, as we do each week, which seeks to inform you of the upcoming events here at Unity and serves as an invitation and a roadmap to deeper involvement. As always, we announce what's going on at Wellspring Wednesday, and this week, our featured program is The Nature of American Life, led by Professor James Farrell. This presentation explores how Americans think about nature and why we love nature and destroy it at the same time. Combining ecology and religion, this class will explore the moral ecology of everyday life and the ways that people of faith can make a difference in nurture nature for future generations. As always, you are invited for dinner at 6, followed by a brief worship service, and classes and lectures begin at 7:10. If you'd like to attend the meal, we ask that you please sign up at the Wellspring Wednesday table in the parish hall. Tomorrow, on Monday, nationally recognized speaker Ruth Hayden will give a presentation entitled Money and Values, Living a Regret-Free Life. The cost is $5, and we hope to see many of you there. And next Saturday, October 13th, at 8 a.m., we hope you'll join us for the first of our monthly pancake breakfasts. And we invite you to join us for coffee hour in the parish hall at the conclusion of the service. There you can greet one another, meet new friends and old, peruse our book stall, and visit the many information tables. Next Sunday is Celebration Sunday, when we are invited to renew our financial commitment to the church. And I am pleased to announce that a wonderful colleague of ours, Rosemary Bray McNatt, who is a minister in one of our Manhattan congregations, who's a stimulating and provocative preacher, will be delivering the sermon. And music will be offered by the Youth Choir, the Unity Choir, and the Eclectics in the morning. And Peter Mayer is going to be providing music at our 4:30 service. So we are thrilled about all of those things. Again, services, as always, are at 9, 11, and 4:30. Karen and I would like to greet you following the service at the Portland Avenue doors. And once again, welcome to Unity Church.
Saraswati, Saraswati. rest with thee. Saraswati, Saraswati, namastubhyam.
Saraswati, namastubhyam.
Varade kamarupini.
Varade kamarupini.
Vidyarambham karishyami.
Vidyarambham karishyami.
Siddhir bhavatu me. Saraswati namastubhyam varade kamarupini.
Saraswati namastubhyam
varade kamarupini. Vidyarambham karishyami siddhir bhavatu me sada. Saraswati namastubhyam varade kamarupini. Vidyarambham karishyami siddhir bhavatu me sada. Saraswati namastubhyam varade kamarupini. Vidyarambham karishyami siddhir bhavatu me sada. Vidyarambham karishyami siddhir bhavatu me sada. Vidyarambham karishyami siddhir bhavatu me sada. Sada.
To believe your own thought, to believe that what is true for you in your own private heart is true for all, that is genius. Come, let us worship together. Unison number 487 in the back of your hymnal. The bell is full of wind, though it does not ring. The bird is full of flight, though it is still. The sky is full of clouds, though it is alone. The word is full of voice, though no one speaks it. Everything is full of flame, though there are no roads. Everything is flame towards its presence. Every Sunday, we set aside time to expand the caring ministry of this congregation. Together, we recognize the cycle of life and death, the circle of love, compassion, and witness that permeates this sacred place. Our hearts are with all those who live with grief or chronic pain, for illnesses seen and unseen, those who live with addiction, with mental illness, those who care for family members in ill health, and those who knowingly face their final days. We celebrate the life and mourn the death of Daphne Birdall, who died on Friday. A service to honor Daphne's life will be held this Friday at 4 p.m. in the sanctuary. We hold Daphne's entire family, her parents, her siblings, her daughters, her husband, and all of her colleagues at the U in our healing prayers and thoughts. We send healing thoughts to Virginia Lanigren, who is home recovering from a perforated ulcer. Her recovery is going very well, but she isn't used to being slowed down by anything. We hold Jessica and Guy Peterson and their son Caden in our healing thoughts and prayers. Jessica is pregnant with twins and spent the last week in the hospital, but is home now, but is still on bed rest, waiting for the arrival of the twins. And we are thrilled to announce the arrival of Jolt, a healthy baby boy that was born to our partner minister, Kinga Reka, 9 days ago. And we stand in compassionate solidarity with our neighbors all around the world who suffer in the midst of habitual violence. May they and we be instruments of a lasting peace. And I now invite you to share the names of those people you would like to celebrate, memorialize, or hold in the embrace of this beloved community. For the names which have been spoken and the names which remain in the silent sanctuary of our hearts, may we be forever grateful for this tapestry of community that we weave together. And now will you join with me in a moment of meditation and prayer. God of many names and beyond all naming, may we experience our connection with an enduring and abiding spirit that grows within us and among us. May we cultivate an interior life that enables us to feel a graciousness of spirit as it moves over the mysteries of living and dying. And may we find ways to translate that spirit into a gracious hospitality that ripples out into the world. May our passions be released, our confidence renewed, our arrogance tempered by humility, and may our life always be grounded in gratitude for this one precious life. May it be so, and amen. Will the children please stand? We're glad you're here. We're glad that you shared this time with us. We want you to know that you are important members of our religious community. We value your involvement, and we now will sing you to your classes. Will you join me in singing the children's recessional? I'd like to invite Justin Schroeder to come up to the chancel, our new membership coordinator.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's wonderful to be up here with you this morning, especially on a morning where we welcome into our community 7 new members. To become a member of this church means something. It's more than belonging. It's more than worshiping on Sunday morning. It's more than being as generous as you can when you make a financial pledge to this church. And it's even more than signing the membership book and being able to vote at our annual meetings. Membership is a profound statement, a bold declaration. It is an individual proclaiming, "I freely choose this faith community. I believe in the mission and vision of this church and will share my gifts to serve that vision. I'm willing to let this faith and these people challenge, change, and shape me, and I them, as together we move closer to living lives of integrity, service, and joy." This stuff gets me excited. It gets me hot and excited, and it's not just the humidity in here. Because seriously, this faith and what we do together as a community here and outside these walls, it matters. It matters, this work we do. And today we begin this work. We begin this work anew with 7 new members. Let us celebrate and welcome them and all that they are, all that they bring, and all the ways that we will grow together in the spirit of love. As I invite our newest members forward, those who have just signed the membership book this morning, I hope all of you who are already members, who call this your faith home, will notice who they are and will welcome them more deeply into the life of our community. Specifically, after the service, I invite you to welcome our newest members at a reception, honoring them in the center room. Will our newest members please join me on the chancel as I read your name? Leah and Bill Doherty, Rick Jolly, David and Mary Kujawski, Dan and Roxanne Lehman. In your order of service is printed the ingathering of new members, and it begins with you, the congregation of Unity Church. Let us begin our ingathering litany.
Our collection this morning is going to Minnesota Helps, an agency committed to channeling funds to those victims of the floods in the southern part of our state. The collection today will specifically go to help fund daycare centers, which were closed due to the flood. And many people can't go back to work because they can't put their kids in daycare. So getting the daycare centers up and running again is essential to having the community come back to a restored and repaired ability to go on with their lives. So will the ushers please come forward? And as they do so, I encourage you to give as generously as you possibly can with today's collection. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate our lives and our many offerings. I'd like to invite Leah Rivamonte to join us up in the chancel.
Good morning, everyone. Why unity? The sanctuary, all of it, all that it contains, the thick, dark, heavy beams, the reredos, the silence, the music, the readings, the prayers, the names. The words from the pulpit, sometimes soothing, full of meaning, challenging, at turns intellectually stimulating, provocative, emotional, sometimes amusing, always deeply felt. The greetings. As a worship associate, I've had the privilege of receiving personal greetings from many of you, so thank you. And as a member of the welcome team on the Holly Avenue side of things, I have been able to greet many of you as well, so thanks for that too. Coming of age. If any of you have been witness to our youth at the end of April, telling us what they believe. It's unbelievable. They are so heartrending and so genuine and shockingly wise. The Tower Club, the Wellspring Wednesday cooking teams, Ruth Palmer, and the music. The babies, the blessings, the large, ambitious, hopeful vision of our leadership, Rob and Jan, the careful thoughtfulness of the Board of Trustees, that such a thing as the anti-racism leadership team exists, the earnestness, the politics, hymn singing, Christmas Eve, fair trade coffee, the children, the stories, the library, the organ, and you. So why pledge? To put a slight twist on a very tired TV commercial catchphrase. Because I'm worth it. I have to say, my husband and Matt and I both work at small, very small nonprofits. You might say together, we are ourselves a very, very small nonprofit. Emphasis on the nonprofit. We don't have a lot of discretionary income. But since coming here, our pledge has become an organic part of our necessary expense line in our budget. 2 years ago, Matt and I were married in this sanctuary. We delayed the ceremony a long, long, long time. One of the reasons we did it, finally, was because we had this place in which to exchange our vows. And we wanted to share this place, and it goes without saying, the wisdom of Rob and Jan, with all of our friends and family. It was actually a very conscious desire to proselytize, I have to say. We wanted to say, hey, look, everybody, church is not irrelevant. We were very boastful, and not all of our friends have converted, unfortunately. But I know for a fact that many of them were very impressed, not just by the space, but by the ritual and the care and the beauty of the whole thing. So I'm testifying this morning, and I know there are some among us who are feeling stretched to the max, economically speaking, and some who feel that pledging is simply an unaffordable luxury. And I want to say, I know where you're coming from, really. I've been there. But on the other hand, if you've been coming here and if you make an honest assessment about the true worth of this place, you might come to the same conclusion as I. You're worth it. Thanks.
From the Good Earth by Pearl S. Buck. Then in the evening, he stood in the doorway of his house and looked across the land, his own land, lying loose and fresh from the winter's freezing and ready for planting. It was full spring, and in the shallow pool, the frogs croaked drowsily. The bamboos at the corner of the house swayed slowly under a gentle night wind, and through the twilight, he could see dimly the fringe of the trees at the border of the near field. They were peach trees, budded most delicately pink, and willow trees thrusting forth tender green leaves. And up from the quiescent waiting land, a faint mist rose, silver as moonlight, and clung about the tree trunks. At first, and for a long time, it seemed to Wang Lung that he wished to see no human being, but only to be alone on his land. Then Wang Lung set himself robustly to the soil and he begrudged even the hours he must spend in the house for food and sleep. He loved rather to take his roll of bread and garlic to the field and stand there eating, planning, and thinking. Here shall I put the black-eyed peas, and here the young rice beds. And if he grew too weary in the day, he laid himself into a furrow, and there, with the warmth of his own land against his flesh, he slept.
On the Road to Delphi by Linda Paston. Tourist, beware. The sacred bay of Corinth is charged with aluminum. At the crossroads, almost invisible, Oedipus waits. Have an offering ready and a sacrifice. You may ask one question, be specific. The answer has always been the same. Look for it among the broken stones under your sandal, or in the unbroken light of the Mediterranean sky. And remember this. Virgins were said to be unreliable. So they chose as priestess a woman of a certain age. By the moon, your flesh is the color of marble. You are that age now. I'd like to apologize for the heat in the sanctuary. We are obviously having a malfunction with the air conditioning unit, and because of our connections with the universe, I can promise you that it won't be this hot next week. I say that in all humility. I begin with a story. A young, earnest monk entered the monastery, dedicated and determined to find a path to enlightenment. And he was so determined that he would find the wise teacher that would lead him to the way, that he traveled from monastery to monastery, meeting with teachers. And he would ask as he would interact with other monks, he would ask for their advice. Who do you think is the wise teacher? And that would lead him on to the next monastery. And he traveled this way for a long time. And each time he would meet with the master, he would think and settle into the monastery. But soon he grew impatient and restless, and then, of course, would move on. But as he interviewed people about who was the wisest master, he kept hearing one name in particular be repeated. And so eventually he decided that he had to go see that master. Now, going to see this master who oversaw a monastery in a very, very remote area meant that he had to travel for many, many, many months. And he took on the arduous task and traveled for many months in cold weather and hot weather and rain and sleet, but travel he did. And eventually he got to the monastery. And he immediately found and asked to meet with the wise teacher. And he said, I have come to this monastery to learn from your wise teachings. And cutting through all the niceties, he said, please show me where to enter the way. Do you hear the sound of the valley stream? Yes, of course. Enter there. Listening to a stream? Do you mean to say that we could have been present all along? That the way was there, he just didn't know? Now, the monk had passed many such valley streams in all of his journeys. And I wonder, do you think he found the way? Or do you suppose that he once again grew frustrated and kept looking for the perfect teacher who would provide the answers he sought? I also wonder, would he ever find the answer? Because he was always looking outside himself for that answer. When the answer clearly was, stop, pay attention. The way is here. And before I begin talking about sources of faith, I want to define faith for those of you who have not been present to any of our other services in our Dimensions of Faith series. Faith is not a commodity that you either have or you don't. It does not require a belief system and is not dependent on a deity, though it doesn't deny one. It's an inner quality that unfolds as we learn to trust our own deepest experiences. Faith is a lantern that lights your way, Rob said last week. I said, it's what gets you out of bed and helps you take the next step when we are unsure of ourselves. It's how we structure our lives, and as the Buddhists say, it is where we place our heart. It is trust and confidence. It is a quality of faithful living, and it implies an openness to life in all its changes, challenges, and connections. Now, in Western society, we have been acculturated to see faith as a commodity, something that you have or you don't. We have been raised to believe that faithful people accept a particular version of truth that is real and valid. Outside sources, in other words, communicate what is true, false, and even possible in a given life. Outside sources are the true arbiter and authority, and they define our lives when, like the monk, we are looking for guidance in our lives and our natural impulse is to look to outside authorities or sources. We have been led to believe that faithful people accept the ideologies and doctrines that are handed down as true, and faithless people don't. The problem, of course, with this kind of thinking is that there is no room, no encouragement for that necessary internal discernment about what actually feels true that we take in from outside sources. Now, interestingly enough, our faith tradition, Unitarian Universalism, has evolved in a quite different way, which is to place their emphasis not on the outside, but on the discerning individual. But the problem becomes, I believe, in the interaction between the discerning individual and the outside sources. If you're driving down the street and you see a bumper sticker and it says question authority, you can assume that the person bought it at a Unitarian Universalist church bookstore. And that has been one of the mottos of our faith. And it is important. It's important to question authority. But to always decide that you know best is to miss an important point. That there are things that we want to take in that we want to resonate with our own lives and our own experiences. For centuries, people traveled to the oracle at Delphi looking for the answers to life's perennial questions. And they would go to present themselves to the oracle, a priestess of a certain age, trained in trance and other celestial arts. But interestingly enough, before encountering the oracle, the seeker passes a stone with carved words in the stone. And these words are impossible to miss. And these words lent essential advice to the seeker. Know thyself. Not listen carefully, not behold the truth, but know thyself. And this ancient counsel continues to ring true. To hear the truth, to understand what is true, we must first search our heart to know our motives and our understanding of the world. When we place faith entirely on the outside, we can be blown around like leaves on a windy day, and we're not anchored in our own experience and what our intuition and our own inner wisdom tells us is true. We place our faith entirely on others rather than remembering the need for faith in our own understanding. And of course, then we can end up caught in structures that ultimately are not life-enhancing. Now, please don't hear me saying that going to outside sources for answers is all wrong. It isn't. For every sermon or article I write, I read, I research, I ruminate, I engage in meaningful dialogue with the worship associates, I talk to my colleagues and my friends. I couldn't be in the ministry without continually learning from others. And truth that and faith that emerges in community and in conversation is one of the cornerstones of our faith. Discerning what your inner truth is it about an openness to the interaction between inner and outer sources? It is to work with intention on your own interior life, to nourish it with the nutrients of others' insights and learnings and wisdom. But the growth of our interior life can't be dependent only on that, but must rely on our own efforts to keep digging and digging and digging so that the deep nutrients that actually reside there, already exist in our own life, can interact powerfully and positive with those outside nutrients. One of the themes of our sabbatical was hospitality. And one of the surprises for me, though it shouldn't have been, was how much hospitality we received in our travels and how often the hospitality was really about an openness to grace. I learned something that doesn't come naturally to me, which is, in the words of Minister Dr. James Forbes, how to make a place for grace. Grace kept coming unbidden to us through everything that we did. And you know what? It still keeps coming. And I'm home now. And it should stop. Or at least that's kind of what I figured would happen. Or is it that I'm actually seeing things with different eyes? That grace does happen around us all the time, but that I just didn't have the faith in that possibility, that grace could operate so abundantly in my little life. So I didn't see it when it's been there all along. Howard Thurman, another remarkable theologian and minister, says, to behold truth, one must look at the world with quiet eyes. With quiet eyes, we can see our interconnectedness. With quiet eyes, we can see and experience grace. With quiet eyes, we can see patterns of connections that make up our inner life and sustain our spiritual quests. The sources of faith are many: our experiences, the teachings we seek out, the best of the faith traditions of our past, the faith tradition we embrace in the present, those teachings that fall into our lives through easy and/or intentional conversations, or those lessons that just arrive. And of course, the small, still voice within. Developing faith in this challenging world is a matter of deep discernment, of give and take between what is inside and outside. If we are people of a strong faith, then we are people committed to an open relationship with the world and with the holy. This is what Ralph Waldo Emerson believed so strongly, and the thought shook the religious world of the 1900s. That he believed that we deserve a relationship, a direct relationship with the holy. And of course, this is all well and good. But that direct relationship, that open channel, places responsibility on our shoulders to make sure that there is good reception, that we're actually on the right channel so that the information can come. Our tradition has not done a good job of instilling confidence in our ability to discern truth and to look at these with discerning eyes. And the old adage, to stop and smell the roses, to look at the world with quiet eyes, if you will, isn't just about slowing down your life. It's about letting the world enter you, letting yourself come into relationship with it, taking time to be changed by it. And of course, it's not just the roses, and it's not just things that are pleasant that come into our lives. Having faith doesn't mean not having to make an effort. When we are trying to create change, we pour ourselves into the endeavor and do our best to accomplish our goal. The gift of faith is that allows us to make that intensity of effort guided by a more holistic view of life with all its mutability, dislocation, and unruliness. Whatever takes us to our edge, to our outer limits, leads us to the heart of life's mystery, and there we find faith. In India, we met life-changing visionaries. One of these people, Vivek Pandit, will be here with us in early November. Vivek has devoted his life to freeing slaves. And he says that the most important thing that he says to the indentured servants he encounters is this: you are free. No one can take away your personal and internal freedom. And it's from this recognition of this internal truth that has transformed thousands and thousands of lives. As the head of the Union of Former Slaves told Rob and me, I was born in a cattle shed. I was raised to believe that I was actually lower than the cattle in the shed. I learned growing up that I was an animal and not a human being. Mr. Vivek Pandit taught me that I was a human being. And now I head a union of 150,000 people who have also grown to believe that they are human beings. Yes, Vivek Pandit was an outside source, transforming the lives of thousands of people. But that's my point. It's the interaction between the external truths and the internal truths that are unlocked when we allow those truths to enter in. And they can be transformative, which is why we need to take this relationship so seriously. To be hospitable to all of life's lessons and take seriously the cultivation of our own interior life.
May it be so, and amen.
The ground is frozen. Dig deeply and find and nurture those nutrients which reside within. And when the time is right, feel invited to reach out to those other nutrients that can be laid down and enrich further the soil of your interior life. May it be so.
Shakti Sahita Ganapatim Shakti Sahita Ganapatim Shankaradi Sevitam Shakti Sahita Ganapatim Shankaradi Sevitam
Virakta Sakala Munivara Sura Raja Vinuta Guru Guham Shakti Sahita Ganapatim Shankaradi Sevitam Virakta Sakala Munivara Sura
Raja Vinuta Guru Guham
Bhaktali Poshakam Bhavasutam Vinayakam Bhaktali Poshakam Bhavasutam Vinayakam Bhukti Mukti Prada Bhushitangam Rakta Padambuja Bhavayami Bhukti Mukti Prada Bhushitangam Rakta Padambuja Bhavayami
Paga Pamada Padanisa Paga Pamada Pagasari
Paga Pamada Padanisa Ga Pamada Rizanisa Paga Pamada Padanisa Paga Pamada Pagasari Paga Pamada Padanisa Ga Pamada Rizanisa Shakti Sahita Ganapatim Shankaradi Sevitam Virakta Sakala Munivara Sura
Raja Venuta Guru Guham Parvati Pate Sata
Pavanav Sambhu Pada Saroja Nandana Dana Dheera Vibho Suprabho Pada Nisa Nisa Regamapa Mapagari Sarigamapa Pata Pazani Dani Dava Mapa Magari Sarigama Gari Gama Pamaga Gamari Riga Zaza Riga Mama Paga Gamari Riri Pamaga Gamari Riga Zaza Riga Magari Zani Zariga Zaza Pamaga Sani Dava Papa Magamari Pamaga Sani Dava Magari Riri Pamaga Pamagari Magari Zaza Gama papa pa sa pa 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 sa pa gama pa ma gama ri 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 gama papa pa sa pa 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 sa pa gama pa ma ga ri sa sa
paga pa ma da pa da ni sa
paga pa ma da pa ga sa ri paga pa ma da pa da ni sa
paga pa ma da pa da ni sa
paga pa ma
ga pa ga sa ri
paga pa ma
da pa da ni sa
Gapamagari Zanisasa Shakti Sahita Ganapatim Shankaradi Sevitam Virakta Sakala Munivara Sura Raja Vinuta Guru Guham Shakti Sahita Ganapatim Shankaradi Sevitam Virakta Sakala Munivara Sura Raja Vinuta Guru Guham
Raja Vinuta Guru Guham Raja Vinuta Guru Guham